you have left to buy?
Three.
That's it? That's pretty Maybe. Good. That's not bad. I'm the same. I've got three as well, including yours, which I do feel weird. I'm proud of myself that I know what I'm getting you, but and that it's not even something I can just like go online and order, that I kind of have to make a trip. But it's like, it's still gnawing at me that it has to be.
Good.
Are you usually ahead, or are you?
I'm usually done as of December 1st, but.
You're behind.
I'm really behind
is
this year.
Like wedding plans getting in the way? Is that what's happening?
It's just general work busyness and
right.
getting around to shopping and then waiting for stuff to show up online.
Welcome to wherever you are. My name is Ryan McNeil in Toronto, Canada, and you are listening to episode 101 of the Matinee Cast. It's the movie loving podcast of my movie loving website, thematinee.ca, your home for cinematic passion and perspective. Today's guest, hot on the heels of my 100th episode, took it upon herself to tweet out, that's 100 episodes that you haven't had me on. And she was quite correct to say so, because if memory serves, we had it lined up at least once or twice that you were going to come on, and then something, I think one time you were sick?
No, you canceled on me.
There was that too? I canceled on you once. Were you ever sick, or am I making that up?
I think you're making it up.
Okay, so this is well overdue, and yeah, there is nothing like getting 100 episodes into something to realize like how many people you still haven't got on the show. Case in point, your husband to be, who's gonna finally show up again.
I was gonna say he's been on once.
He's been on once, but it was episode 6.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so he's overdue. But we're happy to, you know, now that we've got 100 behind us, to start a whole new 100, and hey, you know what better time to bring in today's guest? She's family, and it's kind of rare that I get family on the show, so we're back home today, and we have Rachel West on the show. How are you tonight?
Good.
Keeping warm. It is bitterly cold out, so along with the fact that I haven't had you on in 100 shows, I'm feeling doubly guilty because this is just like brutally cold to have you coming out.
Yeah, I fought the wind chill and made it here.
Yes, so thank you for that. On episode 101, we will be reviewing Nebraska. We will be turning the record over to play the other side and finding out what people want for Christmas. First, though, we need to learn more about Rachel. This is Know Your Enemy.
Actually, do know this question because you used it on a previous show. The first movie I saw in a theater was Song of the South.
Oh yeah, Happy Racism.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay, I do know. Okay, that's right.
Yeah. So that's the first movie that I was physically taken to and physically removed from for screaming at the animated bluebird.
What was it? Just like, do you remember how old you were?
I think it came back into theaters around 86, mm-hmm. so I was probably about 4.
Okay, and the bluebird missed
you? Bluebird, I wasn't afraid of the racism, I wasn't afraid of like Brer Rabbit and everything else, but the animated bluebird
gone.
Mixed in with reality, I had no idea what was happening.
See, now, if that movie was something that Disney still, you know, tapped into, and Lord knows they don't. Yeah,
admitted to actually having?
Yeah. They do not want to have anything to do with that anymore. I would foresee that would mess you up more, because you know that now that bird would be in 3D.
Oh, God.
You know, that bird would be, like, coming right at you, and you would just be, like, screaming bloody murder.
Yeah. That would be absolutely terrifying. I mean, I don't recall anything about it. I think the first movie I remember begging my parents to see was Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh, yeah. I was about the same,
begging.
Actually.
Yeah. That and The Land Before Time. I think they're the same year.
I don't think I've ever actually seen that all the way through. I've seen scenes here and there. Am I missing anything?
So sad.
Oh, it's okay.
Yeah.
Yes. I've watched, Schindler's List 20 times.
But not The Land Before Time. It's coming back to theaters in February.
Is it in 3D?
No, in regular 2D.
Oh, okay. I'll go.
Great Digital Film Fest.
I will definitely go. Yeah, no, definitely. I will check that out. I think you were just mentioning this, but what's one of the last movies you saw?
I did a bizarre double bill yesterday of American Hustle and The Hobbit: Desolation of Smaug.
Now, you probably can't talk too much about either. Smaug you can talk about, because that'll be out by the time we do this. How's Smaug? Smaug?
Smaug. Yeah, it takes some practice to say Smaug. I hated all three Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
I hated the first Hobbit.
Right.
I like this one.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, what's changed?
This one is just pure story.
Right.
There's no preamble. It gets into it. It ends. It's just well done.
Wow. So now, is there a lot of walking, or is it mostly adventure this time?
Mostly adventure.
So, okay.
Yeah.
And how is the Smaug? Because they've been kind of cagey about showing a whole lot of him, right?
It takes a while for him to show up.
Yeah, of course.
But he's worth the wait.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That gives me hope. I'm wary of Lord of the Rings. I've said this before. First of all, I need to rewatch The Hobbit this week.
Sorry, I'm making faces. It's audio.
It's okay. I do want to rewatch it. I usually rewatch the last film of a series just to refresh my memory going in. I wasn't all that nuts about The Hobbit, so I know what I'm getting in for anyway. But I was just kind of like dampened by the end of Return of the King. Because it felt just so drawn out that I never got into anything. I had kind of like left the series alone, and then when the new ones were coming, I'm like, I don't really care. But I am anxious and hearing good things about Smaug as a film actually kind of leaves me excited. And you mentioned American Hustle, you dug, and I'm seeing that tomorrow. So that's one of the ones I'm very much looking forward to. And I'm sure that'll get discussed on the year-end show in some capacity. What is one of the worst films you've ever seen?
Boat Trip.
You didn't even flinch on that. That was great.
I just don't understand it as a film. It's one of the most offensive movies I've ever seen. I don't understand how ending up on a gay cruise is a horrible experience. That would be the greatest thing to ever happen.
I would agree with that. Like, what's
exactly.
You know, everybody's there. Everybody's having a good time. Everybody's partying. How did you end up seeing Boat Trip? Did you lose a bet?
I think it was on TV once, and I just started watching it, or a roommate was watching it at the time, okay. Or something. Like, it was not a personal choice to watch Boat Trip.
You just happened to. Okay.
I just happened upon Boat Trip.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I shake my head when that happens. When it's like, You're probably doing other things, but you realize that you've spent an hour and a half watching either something you've seen before, and you probably could have been doing other things, or something that you really could have been spending your time better.
Yeah,
you know, and you just get sucked in.
Yeah, and the next thing you know, you've just watched Boat Trip. But at least now I have this handy answer whenever anyone asks, "What's the worst movie you've ever seen?"
I'd wear that as a medal. Like, I made it through Boat Trip. You know, oh man.
And I live to tell everyone how much I hated it.
Yeah, starring Academy Award winner Cuba Gooding Jr. Is there anybody else in that? Do you even remember?
Is it Horatio Sanz?
That sounds possible.
There's someone awful in it. The whole thing is awful.
Oh man.
Poor Cuba.
Yeah, no, not even for content. Like, if somebody said, "Hey, I got a great idea for a podcast." No, not gonna happen. Considering that you spent 4 years in film studies, this ought to be interesting. What's a classic that you have not yet seen?
Godfather Part Two.
Okay. I just came off doing an episode of Mammo where I specifically said that I'm stopping the whole "whoa, holy crap" reaction. That is not why I say "whoa." I say "whoa" because I know who you're marrying, and I know what that film means to him. And that's how I wonder how that even okay, you've seen parts of it.
Maybe. I've seen that, is it AMC who runs the chronological version?
Yeah, they put the two of them together.
But they chop it all up so it actually takes place in chronological order. I've seen
that.
Parts of that.
Oh.
I've seen, like, maybe, I don't know where it actually falls in to that, but...
Okay.
Yep.
Now, okay, wait a minute. let's take this off on an extension. Have you seen Part Three?
No.
Okay, all right. That's
just Part One.
Just Part One
on VHS.
I would recommend it. Like, the thing about it is kind of like how getting sucked into Boat Trip. It's long, right? Like, it's not the kind of thing I could say, you know, throw it on while you wrap Christmas gifts, because I believe it's almost 3 hours. I have the internet. It's longer than the first one. I remember I've got the DVDs, and of the DVD set, like, Godfather 1 and Godfather 3 are each one disc. Godfather 2 is two.
Oh, okay.
So it's super long.
And it's not even to suggest that I didn't even like Godfather 1. I just watched the first one and then never watched the second one.
Yeah, yeah. It's 3 hours and 20 minutes. It's 200 minutes long, yeah.
That's also why I haven't seen Lawrence of Arabia. Well, too long.
Yeah, that'll do it. You've got a copy. So one day when you're homesick or something, give it a shot. It's got a lot of, like, it's a lot like the first one where it's got a lot of really cool moments in it. Like, you've seen the pictures of them, I'm sure. You've probably seen them in highlight reels. It's cool to see them all in context. And of course, it's got, like, it starts with a long sacrament again. Like, you know, the first one you had the long wedding. This one, it's a long scene of our first communion.
Okay.
So it's a pretty cool watch.
One day.
Wow. I'm
I'm shocked.
Yeah.
They don't make us watch it in film school.
No, they don't. Last but not least, what's a film that for any reason you wish you'd made?
I couldn't really think of anything that great, so I just went with Moulin Rouge.
Oh, I like, okay, why?
Just visually, it was unlike anything I had ever seen before. I saw it this summer, I don't remember when it came out, but I saw it just leading up to when I started film school.
2001, you would have been going in, yeah.
And then, actually, it's the first movie Shane and I ever saw together in Ottawa. During Frosh Week, a bunch of us went and saw Moulin Rouge in a beautiful old theater in Ottawa. And
while
it just
loaded, I'm sure.
Obviously. And it just, you know, kicked off the next 4 years of studying film for me. And, you know, I love everyone in it. I don't even like musicals that much, but...
That's kind of funny because, like, as more time is going by, I keep running across people who don't like it. And I don't really understand that.
No, I don't
you know
either.
Like, I get that musicals are a particular taste and all, like, that not everybody's into musicals, and that the first 45 minutes are really, really frenetic.
Yeah.
But I kind of thought that the hate had dulled. So every time I run into somebody like, oh my god, Moulin Rouge, is like, really? Still?
Yeah, still love it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I could totally give that answer as a film that I wish I'd made, so well done. Yeah. There you go. You've studied nicely over 100 episodes and got that out. Well, that's Rachel. It's your chance to come talk to me right after this, so we're going to take a break and be right back. Why are you shaking like a leaf? Come on, come talk to me. Please talk to me. With just a few weeks to go until Christmas, by the time this episode drops, we'll be probably about 10 days away or thereabouts. I asked listeners what they would like, what movie geekery they would hope to find under their Christmas tree. If they celebrate, if not, hey, what the heck, just what kind of stuff do you want right now? I'm not going to get it for you, but I just thought it'd be a neat topic. Jason Cluett, who actually wrote me a very nice email about the podcast, so thank you, Jason, for that. He wants a Lego DeLorean. Because secretly I'm a child and my Lego Pizza Planet truck needs something to race. And AT-AT bookends, like those big... Are they call them AT-ATs from...
No idea.
You just don't know you do. From Star Wars. The big walker...
Oh, those things. I saw someone on the internet make one out of like ketchup dipping packets. And it looked really good.
Oh, yeah. Man. All of our Star Wars geek friends are probably yelling at me right now because I don't know if they're AT-AT or AT-ATs, and I'm sure it's common knowledge. I'm still stymied by Lego. I don't mean this to like diss Jason or anything like that, but Jason Cluett or Jason Gorber, our friend who loves the Lego, but I'm impressed and just stymied by like how big it still is.
Well, there's a Lego movie coming.
I know. Like, I was like, really? Is this happening? Like, it's cool. Like, it's kind of cool to see that something that's been around that long is still huge. On Facebook, David Bishop wants the Man of Steel Collector's Edition. He says that would be nice. Rachel shaking her head. You weren't a fan.
No, I was not.
Sam Akosh in Sydney wants a new shelf. We're fast running out of room for our DVD collection. I can sympathize.
Yep.
I actually envy you guys because you have far more shelf space than we do. So I have to like really think about what I buy these days.
Yeah, there is an IKEA Benno DVD shelf on my Christmas list.
Really?
For that reason.
Wow.
Out of space.
Oh, man. Kate Bradford, who you last heard on the 100th episode, said, I actually legitimately asked for nothing except a TIFF Flex Pack. I hit that home with the family. TIFF Flex Pack. Kate, I don't think they listen to my... Oh, no, they do listen to my show. There we go. Kate's family, get her to Flex Pack. She really wants it.
It's a pretty good gift.
It is. Well, because she was the one... She was setting... you might remember. She watched Under the Skin
yep.
with us. And this year was like the her first series of screenings. I think in the past she might have seen like one or two, but no more usually than like one per festival. And this year she wants to do it like full out.
Dude, legit.
So she's saying to the family, hey, throw into the kitty because I really want to do this proper this year. That's a good way to do it.
That's a good, yeah.
I never thought about that because it's not, especially when like you're asking like a bunch of people, it's not that bad.
Yeah, pitch in $25.
Yeah,
and
then you're done. yeah, totally. Good luck, Kate. I hope you get that. Corey Pierce said, someone get me a Turbo Man. Yeah. I haven't watched that yet this year. It's probably been on.
It's probably on right now.
Yeah, it probably
Just
is.
Just ask Sinbad for one. I'm sure he's not doing anything.
No. Zing. Paolo wants the Jingle Bell Dance from Mean Girls. $5 says he's performing it somewhere right now. On Twitter, Nick Hatzera said that Wes Anderson set, give it to me. Is there a set? Or is she talking about the book?
I didn't know if there was a set.
There's a set. I want that. She also wants the trailer for How to Catch a Monster. I want to be excited for that film again. What's How to Catch a Monster?
I have no idea. I feel like I should know.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, if you don't know, I'm kind of worried. But yeah, good luck with that. Nick, I want to know about the Wes Anderson thing. That really has my curiosity. Amir Sultani said, a new Scorsese film is getting released, so I guess I'll be just fine. On Christmas Day, no less. I got to say, the one thing I do kind of grumble about now that we're older and we got to do like separate family stops on Christmas Day is I used to do a Christmas Day movie with Shane for the longest time, and that has like there is no chance of that anymore. And there's good stuff that always comes out on Christmas Day, so right now it's like Wolf of Wall Street. I almost wish I could steal away and watch that on Christmas Day,
and then to find 3 hours
to
watch something like that on Christmas, that's probably the hardest part.
It's not making it easy. Jake Cole wants James Kant's Bresson book and Rosenbaum's Goodbye Cinema, Hello Cinephilia. I don't know if he's going to hear this, but I actually have a copy of that and I might just send it to him. We'll see. Nick Priggy in Chicago says, all I want is the definitive Jean Harlow biography. A lot of people wanting books. And the Francis Ha Criterion. Did you like Francis Ha?
I did.
Yeah, me too. I it's kind of funny. I've talked to people who didn't, and I was like, what? Like, what's not to like?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Looks pretty. You've got Gina.
Yeah,
you've got Greta Gerwig dancing. Come on.
It was entertaining.
Adam Batty in England said he's asked for a bunch of Rossellini things, the Criterion box sets, and Gallagher's book. Daniel McCarthy, I've got all the Brits emailing me this time, said that massive teddy bear from the limo backseat in Die Hard. Because we all need some cute in the middle of terrorist slaying.
Yep.
I'm behind. I haven't watched Die Hard yet this Christmas.
No, me either. I'm still behind on my Halloween movies.
Oh,
so.
I think that boat is sailed. I really do. Andrew Robinson wants a PlayStation 4 and the Zatoichi Chi box set. Good luck with that, buddy. Jessica at the Velvet Cafe in Sweden wants something called Hatchet Job. Oh, Hatchet Job, Love Movies, Hate Critics by Mark Kermode, which sounds cool. Again, a lot of books. I like this is why I ask people, because I'm getting ideas. She won't agree with everything, but she definitely wants it. Rachel Thoreau wants a free nanny so she can actually go to the movie theater again. She has a 1.5-year-old now, and her oldest is I think just like 4 or 5.
Oh yeah.
So she doesn't get out as much as she used to. Alex Kittle, Film Forger, said, no more room for all our Blu-rays and DVDs, so I would also like some storage and shelving units. That's a pop. That in books. Look at this.
Practical listeners.
Yeah. Bubba Wheat, Flight Tights and Movie Nights said, top of my list would probably be theater gift cards. I would love to hit the theater more. Everything else is streaming somewhere. Rich Watson said, definitely the new Barbara Stanwyck biography, and I'll probably end up waiting until it comes in softcover, though. More books. James Blake Ewing said a Blu-ray release of Like Someone in Love. I don't even really want someone to buy me a copy. I just want it out there so that people can see it. Clearly a Kiarostami fan. And last but not least, Stevie Taylor in New Zealand wants In the Name of the Father, The Ice Storm, and a shipping container to take all my DVDs to university.
Oh, yeah.
She's starting first year soon.
Oh, my God. I'm old, so I brought all my VHS tapes to university.
Right?
That was bulky.
Yeah. I was going to say, Stevie, at least you can get, like, a Case Logic case and just take the discs. Well, thank you, everybody. I hope that Santa Claus is good to you, or you know, that somebody gifts you these things. You know, you're up. What's what movie related goodness? Do you even like? Because you work, I don't really want to get into it too much because I don't know how much you're allowed to say if I kind of point a finger at it.
Oh, I can say lots.
Okay. but, like, do you still kind of dig getting the movie-related stuff, the books? And because I kind of feel like if this stuff comes across your desk, that it takes away some of the joy from it anyway.
The physical take-home hard goods of DVDs don't cross my desk as much as they have in the past when I used to be an entertainment merchandiser.
Right. And no books or anything like that?
Not really. Okay. Like, it's...
You might get the odd piece of swag.
Yeah, we'll get the odd piece of swag, you know, in case anyone ever wants to play That's My Boy branded beer pong, or what's the other one? Bad Grandpa Bingo. I've got that sort of garbage.
Oh, cool.
I don't, you know... I like it. We use it at work. But, yeah, I don't get the sort of collectible stuff that anyone would actually want. Like, okay. I have a great Footloose sweatshirt, but...
I could use that.
Well, it's a woman's sweatshirt.
Oh, forget it. but what's got your eye? What would you like for Christmas?
Well, now I'm listening. I just heard what everyone else was asking for. I'm like, oh, I should have added, you know, another shelf to my list. I should be adding that book. I should be adding...
Let's be clear. I still haven't bought your gift yet. So.
Okay, then I'll take that IKEA shelf.
Okay.
I don't know. Like, it's kind of hard. This year I had a really hard time with my list.
Okay.
But I think I would like, The Apocalypse. I would like The World's End, and I would like This Is the End.
Nice. I dug them both. I didn't dig This Is the End quite as much. I thought, like, I kind of smirked my way through that, whereas World's End, I was like, doubled over.
And I think I was the opposite.
Oh, really?
That. Yeah.
Okay. And, yeah, like, definitely having both those and watching them together would probably be pretty damn cool. Nice. Well, you know, again, idea. No, it's not bad at all. I know mine, and it really kind of got underlined two episodes ago when Corey Atad and I were talking about Nashville. There's a Criterion of that coming out, and I don't have a copy of it at all. So to have that movie on Blu-ray for starters, and it looks like it's like a really nice.
Is it in the next batch of releases from Criterion?
Or it's
came
out
now?
Last week.
Oh, okay.
So so it's out now. It's kind of funny. I handed people like. A long list of movies. I'm like, here, pick from this. it actually kind of keeps things interesting because I don't know what I'm actually getting. I'm like, here's a list of 20. I don't expect you to buy all, pick from it. So it kind of keeps me some mystery of even if they sometimes go off book. Yeah, no, that's great.
You're going to end up with 6 copies of the same thing.
Well, maybe now. We'll find out, right? Well, there we go. Again, hopefully Rachel gets her Apocalypse double feature and hopefully I get Criterion Nashville. next episode will be the year-end episode, and there's not going to be any feedback on that one just because it goes on a long time anyway. So for episode 103, I will repeat this on Twitter and Facebook as time gets closer, but I want to know what films in 2014 you're looking forward to. There's there is a lot of cool stuff coming. There's a new Wes Anderson movie coming.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, which
Godzilla.
And Godzilla. I did. You know what? I think I might be one of the few, but I got really stoked today for, is it Jupiter Ascends?
Jupiter Ascending.
Oh, that looks good. So I'm stoked for that. But let me know, people. Look up what's coming, and let me know what you're looking forward to in 2014, and we'll get back to that in episode 103. For now, though, it's time to talk about Nebraska on the New Slang right after this. Alexander Payne's new movie coming up. Nebraska is directed by Alexander Payne and written by Bob Nelson. It stars Bruce Dern, June Squibb, Will Forte, and Bob Odenkirk. It's the story of Woody, that's Bruce Dern, who gets a publisher's clearinghouse-like letter saying he's won a cash prize of $1 million. And he sets out to Nebraska from Montana to pick it up by foot as this film begins. And his son David, that's Will Forte, runs into him, and his wife basically are trying to figure out what to do with Woody wanting to take off after his $1 million and kind of balancing placating him with keeping him in check. So it's no secret. that I'm a sucker for the film's look, and it's also no secret that I'm a sucker for black and white photography. So when this film came along, I really fell for its visuals, but I kind of started to wonder about the effectiveness of the device. So while it's an odd place to start this whole conversation, pop quiz hotshot, what does the use of black and white bring to Nebraska? Does it add something to the film that it wouldn't otherwise have had, or is it just a gimmick that really didn't need to be utilized in the first place?
I think it definitely adds something. So I actually interviewed Alexander Payne.
Yes, you did.
And I asked him that question, you know, kind of why black and white? Why not do it in color? You know, what kind of inspired the look? And he gave an anecdote that basically said he just wanted it to be that visual canvas, dry-looking film. And, you know, I guess his mother even questioned him on why is it in black and white? Why aren't you doing it in color? And after she watched the movie, said, oh, now I get it. That would have been stupid in color.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. To answer my own question, I don't think it's a gimmick. Like, I don't think it's something that if you strip the color away that all of a sudden the whole thing falls apart. Like to really make it a stupid answer, it's not Pleasantville. You know what I mean? You know, or like something like that. I do think that it adds something to it. And I kind of do wonder if I would have been as affectionate about this movie if it was in color, just because I can't envision the color palette. Like, everything that they went through seemed really drab.
Yeah.
Like they were never in a really, really handsome spot at all. I kind of noticed that again in a movie we'll be talking about later with about Schmidt. But I actually thought that the move to black and white actually really helped it. And the thing that I like about it, well, first of all, I think the same day you got to talk to Payne, I got to go to a screening where he did an introduction. Yeah. Were you at that as well?
No, because I saw
it, saw it the day before.
Like a couple days before. Right. And then that's why he was in town getting junket for all of us, you know, online folks.
And he mentioned, like, one of the things he was talking about is, like, all of his favorite movies are in black and white, because he's the kind of person who's watching, like, the old stuff all the time. The thing that I found that I liked about it is because so much of this film is looking into the past, with the age that a lot of these characters are, a lot of their past would have been black and white.
Right?
Like a lot of their past would have been newspapers and black and white photos and that kind of thing. So it really suits that reflection, if that makes sense. It kind of, like, sort of the same way that it suited Good Night and Good Luck.
Yeah, because, no, I agree.
So I dug it. Like, I really dug the look of it. I didn't actually ask you. I assume you liked the movie. Like on the whole, like, what were some of your general...
I really liked it. I am not a fan of Alexander Payne's movies to begin with. Like,
okay.
I liked Citizen Ruth. I saw it shortly after it was released when I was a teenager. I like Election, which is probably the one I've seen the most often. I hate Sideways.
Really?
I hated About Schmidt, which we will get into.
Okay.
When I first saw it, I hated it. I hate Sideways. I hate The Descendants. I hate his movies.
Interesting.
I can appreciate them. I don't like them.
Yeah.
I loved Nebraska.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's different? Like, what's happening here that wasn't happening on those that you liked a lot?
First, well, I mean, this time he cast people I like.
That'll do it.
It's all about me, right?
You should start sending this stuff across your desk.
I know. I love Will Forte.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not MacGruber, but I like Will Forte. I like Bruce Dern. And just, you know, I could kind of see not so much myself in it yet in dealing with my parents, but I can see my parents dealing with
their parents.
With my grandmothers, and it's sort of along the same thing now, so...
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because I'm the opposite of you. I really like Alexander Payne. I've talking about his films after Nebraska came out, I realized that for me his films are evenly divided. He's got six features, and there's three I really like, and there's three I love, and this of course falls into the later. Yeah, I'm with you. I really, really like this movie. It's a simple, like, super simple
it
story.
Is.
Super simple story. But just it's got a lot of warmth to it, and like you said, it's got that tangibility to it that not quite us, although like we're getting older. So it's, you know, I don't think your parents are going there yet or my parents are going there yet, but it's the kind of thing you start thinking about. We'll get to that again in The Savages, I'm sure. But it's just by keeping it so simple. It's just something that I really liked about it.
Yeah, it's just a very simple story. And on the surface, there's simple characters, but there's really a lot more to it.
Yeah, which is kind of crazy, because that kind of leads me to my next point. Basically, I think it's going to stop with our generation, but every generation before, how we didn't really know our parents. We know them as we're growing up, and certainly we become more aware of them as we become adults, and we kind of can piece together the whole story, but we don't really know them as children. You know, we get what they give us and what we may or may not notice. But we don't know them when they were married, and we don't know them when they were growing up. We just get what gets fed to us. So, like, when Will Forte, David, when he finds out, for instance, that, like, his dad served, you know, like, what did that do to my dad? Or when he finds out, like, isn't there at one point he finds out that he was going to leave Kate?
Yeah.
You know, like, you're finding out all this stuff about your parents.
Yeah.
The reason why I say I think that's going to end with us is, we're the first generation that is documenting our every waking thought.
Yeah.
Right? Like, our parents don't really do... Our parents kind of sort of do the Facebook thing, maybe. But, like...
Yeah, our parents understand how to share jokes on Facebook.
Yeah, but, like, my age and younger are really, really just documenting and photographing and recording everything that can easily be found.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah, kids today, I sound like the old person I am, that, yeah, from the minute you're born, your life is now on your parents' Facebook. It is on the internet. You could theoretically go back, you know, when you're 30 years old and see your entire life online.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, that's one of the things I like about this movie is it really underlines, like, one of the last moments where we're not going to know who these people are. Like, we know them as our parents, but we don't know them necessarily as people. So watching David go through that, and even, like, even just watching, like, watching Kate and Woody and how, like, what's happened with their relationship. I really dug it.
Yeah, she seemed to have more sort of shocking reveals.
Yeah, no kidding. her whole scene where she goes through the cemetery.
Yeah.
Like, pointing out person by person. Like, I was, like, doubled over.
Yeah.
Laughing through that whole scene. June Squibb, I didn't really know of her before this, although she's in About Schmidt. But yeah, she, like, stole the show.
Yeah.
For me. You mentioned Will Forte. The thing I dig about him, I sort of wish he'd play this kind of guy more often.
I agree. You know? And I think this was his first opportunity to kind of showcase that he can do something other than MacGruber, other than, even though I love it, The Brother Solomon.
I haven't... Which one's that one?
Directed by Bob Odenkirk. It's Will Forte and Will Arnett.
Right,
Wanna Baby.
Right, right.
For their dad, who's dying.
Yeah, so I really dig it. And Bruce Dern, of course, you kind of, like, anytime you get the old Kotcher on the screen, you worry that, you know, they're just going to be playing old.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a completely different role for him, even looking at his last movie. I mean, I think his last one before this, he was in Django.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, as, you know, the opposite of Woody.
Yeah, I just saw him a few weeks ago when I watched Family Plot.
Oh, yeah, he's in that, and he's in Marnie, too. I think he's got two Hitchcock films under his belt.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the man has worked with, like,
Peckinpah. He's worked with everybody, right? Yeah, jeez, you know. Like, I know, kind of around the campfire, the quintessential Bruce Dern role is him in The Burbs.
I love The Burbs.
As the neighbor. You know, I only saw The Burbs for the first time this year.
Oh, you were missing out.
I know.
Walter, Corey Feldman.
Yeah, I was like, this is what they've all been going on about. I thought he played it really, really well. I think the black and white suits him.
Yeah, I think it does too. It lends him this sort of elder statesman, you know, beautiful portrait-esque appearance.
Yeah, and, like, it, you know, it picks up, like, every little gristle in his face. His hair looks a little bit more wild. I love it.
And he apparently is, as he should be, super proud of this movie. He's just so honored to be a part of it that, in doing my research for the interview I did, he apparently has seen Nebraska at least 18 times, because every time there is some sort of screening and the cast is there, Bruce Dern sits and watches.
Huh.
So he's seen it over and over and over again.
Wow.
Because he's just so blown away by, wow, you know, the response people are giving him in particular.
Wow, that's like, I don't listen to this show more than once. You know, I can't imagine just like and I've been at premieres, or I've been at like TIFF screenings or something like that, where they, you know, they might stay in for a few minutes just to make sure everything's, mm-hmm, okay, but then off they go. I can't imagine sitting and watching 18 times.
Repeatedly. Or even, you know, using the TIFF example, a lot of them are seeing the movie for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but, you know, do they stay on repeated screenings?
Yeah.
Who knows?
No. Well, good for him. Like, and like, it's really well deserved. Like, he's kind of, yeah, for a long time, he was a that guy.
Yeah.
You know, as much as, like, he's really put in his due. You know, he was in Westerns, wasn't he? He was in Westerns with, like,
yeah,
John Wayne.
Yep.
Man.
He's, like, the only person or the first person who ever killed John Wayne in a movie.
That's awesome.
I can't even think of what movie it is. But, yeah, he has that distinction, I believe.
Yeah. I maybe this is one of the things that got it for you, given that you're not really crazy about Alexander Payne. But I like that a lot of the comedy in this was really subtle. It's funny because I've actually heard this referred to as a drama, which,
okay,
like, okay, here it's kind of hard to classify movies sometimes. It's like, for me, it's just as hard to classify music. I've got, like, you know, a lot of alternative in my iTunes library. I don't really get it down all that narrow. But I always thought that this kind of strikes me as a comedy with dramatic moments, not so much a dramedy, if that's a term. But like, the comedy in this movie I really dug because it, you're from a smaller town, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're kind of relating, I'm sure, more than I am, to some of the moments, like the guys, like, gathered at the hole in the wall bar.
Yeah, for
you
sure.
Know? Or the people, like, watching the traffic pass.
Yeah, no, that is...
That's
that is Thorold, Ontario.
Okay. Okay, good. I'm not being presumptuous. Okay. But, like, there's a lot of... It doesn't mock. Like, it's not really out to make fun of that kind,
right,
of thing. It's just... It's really sweet, and it gives you a smile, but it also can provide some laughs, like the scene where they're all in the family room watching football.
That's my favorite scene.
It's awesome. Because, like, the funny thing is... When you watch this movie again, and I kind of get the hunch you're gonna eventually watch Will Forte in that scene.
Yep.
You notice?
Yep.
Like, because you're just watching his eyes go, and he's like not daring to jump into the conversation. Not that it's that hard of a conversation, because it's happening really, really stunted, right? But he's just so clearly, like, not part of this and stymied
and
by the whole thing,
staring as it all goes,
yeah,
down.
And yeah, like it's a 5-minute conversation that maybe has 10 lines to it.
Yep.
About what car they had in what year, while they're all transfixed on the football game. Oh no, I love scenes like that, or like, you know, certainly scenes in the bar, or even just when, like, when the when the kid shows up to take his picture.
Oh yeah,
you
the
know,
little newspaper kid.
Yeah, 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 like that's the kind of guy you've got working at the newspaper in this small town, Nebraska.
I worked at a newspaper in that town, in my small town. Well, it's funny, though, that you say that you see it as a comedy with dramatic moments. I see it as the opposite.
I see it as a drama with
really? Some really comedic moments. And, I mean, I think it is a signature of Alexander Payne's, where he effortlessly does this balance between, you know, a dramatic movie with lighter things that happen. Like, as much as I hate The Descendants, like, for example, that scene where George Clooney's just running around that corner and is like flip-flops,
yep,
as he runs to the other house.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's a serious moment. It's...
It's a heavy film because something like a mother and a wife is not.
Yeah. But then you have these sort of light moments of comedy, and I think that's probably closer to real life,
yeah,
than anything else. Like, I mean, I've definitely, you know, been at funerals where people start laughing.
Yeah, yes.
Or your wedding.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, thank you.
Not that that's a drama,
no,
but
that,
yeah. You know.
It's drama for me. but that's... I guess it's like... That's a really good point. Like, I'd kind of be curious to put this to people and see, like, how they see it, and, like, kind of maybe, like, what that says about just your whole outlook. That's a good point. It's funny that you mentioned him running. So I'm gonna like share my moment now. I actually got to ask a question during the Q&A of Nebraska, and I got to ask Alexander Payne if he deliberately puts into the script, or if he has a thing for grown-ups running in his movie, because every one of his films, I think except for about Schmidt, and I really should have watched for that, has that moment where a grown-up runs in street clothes, and they look ridiculous doing it. And he actually hadn't even noticed.
What's the running moment in Nebraska?
When they're running after the car.
Oh, yeah.
That was actually what he asked, too. He's like, wait, is there a running moment in this? I'm like, oh, I guess you don't do that. So I guess it's one of those funny little things that for every, like, deliberate drop, like, see you next Wednesday or a scene in the bathroom, directors have hallmarks that they don't even realize. So I was like, yeah, I guess I'm like, okay, I guess it's not a thing. So.
And it's interesting in Nebraska because he didn't write the script.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, and like, a lot of the times he's, you know, he puts a stamp on some of the scripts. But yeah, it's not like he wrote a running scene in there. Obviously, we're both really, really fond of this movie. And we close out on a souvenir. So if you could keep any one thing, like a scene or a line or a tangible item from Nebraska, what would be your one takeaway if you could kind of have it and keep?
Oh my God, I don't know. What is that compression thing that they take?
Do you want an air compressor?
Sure, why not?
I'll get you that for Christmas. Okay. My souvenir, I'm not really going to go into it too far because I believe it's a bit of a spoiler. It's the final scene.
Oh.
I'll just say this. There's a drive. And it's a glorious drive. It's right up there with, like, you know, like the most momentous drive that anybody could have. And I just love it. I love what we see out the car windows. I love what we see inside the car. I would play that on a loop if I could. Well, we rate the movies on the Matinee Cast on a scale of 1 to 4 stars. So, Miss West, what do you give Alexander Payne's Nebraska from 1 to 4?
3.5.
Very nice. I give it a 4. Actually, this is one of my favorite films of the year.
Really?
Really surprised at how much I love the movie, and the more I've thought back on it, the more I really like it. I hope I get a chance to revisit it before too much time passes. But yeah, this is a 4-star film for me. I could be totally off my nut. Who knows? But let us know what you thought of Nebraska when you get to see it. ryan@matinee.ca, Twitter, ryan@matinee_ca, or facebook.com/darkmatinee. We're going to come back with 2 more movies on the other side, so join us right after this break. So for Rachel's choice on the other side that she would pair up with Nebraska, we went back to 2007 and a film by Tamara Jenkins. You chose The Savages, which stars Phil Seymour Hoffman and Laura Linney. I mistakenly, when I was going to watch it, thought it was Catherine Keener.
I could see that.
Yeah, like, I think it's one of the few films where Laura Linney has dark hair.
Yeah.
And it seems like a role that Catherine Keener would do.
You know what? It's true. Even though she was Oscar nominated for this role,
I know,
too.
And you forgot.
Poor Laura
Linney. Well, you know what it was? That year, that was like the one movie in the Big Eight that I didn't get to.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I saw all the other screenplay nominees and acting nominees. I never got to The Savages. So thank
you. This
was
your first watch?
Yes. Yeah,
oh,
actually.
Wow.
So good call. For a person who hasn't seen it, like, as soon as I grabbed it, the reason became clear. Why The Savages to marry up with Nebraska?
It's just, you know, there's a lot of similar things. It is two siblings who aren't really that similar, dealing with an aging parent who has, among other things, dementia. In The Savages, unlike in Nebraska, the father is a little bit more gone. He's in a wheelchair for part of it. He's, you know, not all there, can't take care of himself. So it's just sort of an interesting look where it's almost the next step from Nebraska.
Okay. And it's funny that you, like, because when we were talking about Nebraska, you were saying about how it's a drama with comedic moments. That's actually more what I thought of The Savages. I watched that on Sunday, and it was a really kind of gray afternoon, and I really kind of had to peel myself off the couch when that was done. I was a little bummed out by the time I got to the end of The Savages. It was my first watch, and I really dug it. So first of all, so I don't want to say all that and to put it into a light like I didn't care for it. I really liked it a lot, but it to me felt more like Nebraska without the humor.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, and this was my second time watching it. It was a lot more depressing than I remember.
Yeah. The beginning, it's funny too, because the beginning when they're in Arizona is really bright and colorful.
Yes.
And then they get to Buffalo and it turns really gray. And maybe, you know.
Which is what Buffalo looks like.
Well, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Sorry if you're from Buffalo.
No. I'm not sorry. It's exactly like that. It's the kind of thing now, you know, I sort of feel like that is what Nebraska would have looked like. If they didn't switch it to black and white, it would have had that kind of drabness to it and dragged itself down.
Yeah,
more.
And a little bit more bitterness.
Yeah.
I would say it's not as sort of...
plucky?
Yeah, that's a good description. I don't want to say lighthearted because neither one of them are really lighthearted, but The Savages has a lot more of the bitterness and has more of estranged relationship.
Yeah.
Between, you know, both the siblings and the father.
Yeah, and that was the cool thing was, you know, in Nebraska, it's really all on David, with a little bit happening on Kate as well, although I kind of feel like she's more along for the ride, versus the Savages, where you've got Hoffman and Linney as John and Wendy Savage, and they're, along with the fact that they're carrying all this on themselves, they're also trying to deal with each other.
Right.
Like, they're not even in the same city anymore. Like, where'd she live, Los Angeles now?
Yeah, and he's in New York?
He's in Buffalo.
He's the one in Buffalo.
Yeah, exactly, and he's in Buffalo. So even their whole dynamic with one another... it's that kind of thing where you get older and you don't see your sibling quite as much, and they're all trying to deal with it all at the same time. I get the impression that along with it being what Nebraska would be if it wasn't quite as funny, it's also what Nebraska would be if Woody wasn't quite as lucid. Like you said,
right?
You think he's gone, like you think he's not there, and he's really not there. But then, you know, we meet Lenny Savage, played by Phil Bosco, and he's really not there.
Yeah, he's at the point where he can't take care of himself anymore and, yeah, is writing on the walls for, you know, for the nurse in feces.
Yeah, that was a great start to the movie. I was like, yeah. What am I watching? This is only the second time you watched it, eh?
Yeah, so I saw it in 2007 in theaters and haven't seen it or... really thought of it since, and it's since seeing Nebraska, I, you know, it kind of came up again in the back of my mind, which is why this was the perfect opportunity to go and watch it again.
Yeah, and like, did you like catch anything around the second time that you like that was underplayed the first time, or didn't it stick out this time around?
Nothing really stuck out. However, I remember like really, really liking it the first time around, and not so much this time.
Really. That's unfortunate.
Which is funny, because I basically had the opposite reaction to About Schmidt, which we'll get into. Mm. But, yeah, I really just... I don't know if it's because I liked Nebraska so much.
Could be.
And, you know, that was more, you know, fresher in my mind, that it just...
Could be that you felt the drag this time. Because, again, it's a bummer. It's a beautiful bummer, but it is a bummer of a movie.
Yeah, and it's well acted, but, yeah, it's, you know, very high thinking about... you know, mortality and being bitter, and it doesn't really have that strong comedy undertone to deal with those difficult situations. There are funny things that happen.
Yes. I can think of a few specifically too. The one that I saw in the trailer, but it still made me laugh when I saw it, is when Phil Seymour Hoffman as John, when he's eating the snacks at the support meeting, and she's like, we haven't opened the refreshments. It's like, oh, okay. And he puts it like back down on the tray.
Yeah, it's that awkward comedy moments, or you know, with the cat.
Yeah, the cat was awesome. Speaking of Phil Seymour Hoffman, like him and Laura Linney, they are two actors who, like, they're always awesome.
Right.
You know, neither one of them really, maybe Seymour Hoffman, but neither one of them really draw me into a movie because they're in it. But they seem to, like, every movie that they're in, they're great at what they're doing.
Yeah.
You like Hoffman, don't you?
Yeah, I like
him. I know you've got a few of your boys. I couldn't quite remember if he was one. I don't think so.
One of my handsome boyfriends? No, but I did purposefully, well, with your wife, go see him on Broadway in Death of a Salesman with Andrew Garfield.
That's right, you guys did do that. That's right. Yeah.
And he was fantastic.
Yeah, wasn't that directed by Mike Nichols too?
Yep.
Oh my Lord. You guys suck. How was he in that?
Amazing. Just like to see him at his craft in person was incredible.
Wow.
Like if he is ever on Broadway or any play again, just pay as much as you can and go see him.
He's like, he's a guy who kind of snuck up on, like, a lot of people, because he's been around for quite some time.
Right.
Right? Like, he was always that big guy in the gang, right? Like,
yeah.
He was the big kid in Scent of a Woman. He was in...
Yeah. Like, I feel like Talented Mr. Ripley is where I can really remember watching his performance and being like, who is this guy?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like,
it's Freddie
Miles, I first noticed him, I think, in Boogie Nights. Just because he's the one real misfit that doesn't seem to fit with everybody else. Like, everybody else is all these, like, pretty 70s people, and then he's the odd duck that's hanging around. So I think that was the first time I noticed him.
Seems to be his niche.
Yeah, yeah. He does it well. And then, you know, like stuff after that, like Lebowski and Patch. Even Patch Adams, I remember him in. Because
isn't he a big Lebowski?
Yeah, he's Brandt. He's Lebowski's lawyer.
I obviously need to watch that movie.
Was it the Lebowski Little Achievers? You know, like that. Yeah, that's him.
Huh.
Yeah, no, we were watching that on Thanksgiving. It was great. he's been around a long time, but you're right. Like, every movie he's in, including The Talented Mr. Ripley, he always owns every scene.
Yeah.
He's done some crap, but he's always good
he's
in the crap.
He's been good in it.
Yeah, yeah. The one thing there was the rumor floating around after The Dark Knight, and it never, of course, did come to fruition, that the third one was going to have him as the Penguin.
That would have been good.
It would have been awesome.
Yeah.
But, of course, like, that was just one of those internet rumors.
I feel like he's too good for it, though.
Yeah, exactly. what do you know? I'm not doing that. Laura Linney's the same sort of thing. Like, she's been around forever.
Like, I think I first noticed her in Truman Show.
I got that beat. I first noticed her in Primal Fear.
Oh, yeah.
She's the other lawyer, right? She's the one who's not Richard Gere. She's the public defender. Yeah, but she's been in just a zillion movies. And just, like, every time she's got a scene, she's awesome in it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, seeing these... That's the kind of thing you get, like... Even if I wasn't really in the mood to watch The Savages, like, looking at it and going, oh, well, hell, these two people are playing off each other?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I'll watch it for that. What, like, watching it again, like, what was your, just kind of, like, to put a point on it, what was your ultimate takeaway from The Savages, just in relation to Nebraska? Like, did you find that so you're saying, like, you didn't like it as much? Or is it just, like, in relation to Nebraska because you like it that much more?
I think it's a bit of both.
Okay.
I think, I watched it alone on Friday night, so... Mm. You know, after a long week at work, I don't know why. I'm like, I'm just going to go home and cheer myself up with The Savages. yeah, I don't know if it's just thinking about mortality and, you know, the indignity of aging and, you know, aging sucks.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what age you are, you're either dealing with, you know, what's coming down, you're looking... You're being young and looking at what's coming your way when you look at, you know, your parents, your grandparents.
Yeah.
And then eventually you're that.
Yeah.
You're the one being pushed around by, you know, your children and thrown into a home and in Buffalo and on an airplane.
I love how we're saying it with such disdain. Yeah.
I've been. I know. Yeah. Or on a plane with your pants falling down.
Yeah. No, it's brutal. And that, like, it's kind of funny because, like, you were talking... You know, you watched it on a Friday night on your own. I watched it on a Sunday afternoon with Lindsay nearby, and there was no real good time to watch this kind of movie, which is not to say it's bad, far from it, but it's just, you know, what do you say about a movie like that?
Like,
so
that's
the takeaway.
Exactly.
Is choose your moment very, very carefully.
It's like, you know, don't watch Trainspotting and Requiem for a Dream back to back if, you know.
My favorite is the year we watched Trainspotting on Easter Sunday.
Oh, God.
With the whole family around,
no,
too.
No, you didn't.
Yes, we did. Yep. Ask Shane when you get home.
Oh,
I'm not
God.
Making this up.
Wow.
Well, we'll move on to one more movie right after this. Come on back after this break.
Oh, man, look at my life. I'm a lot like you were. Oh, man, look at my life. I'm a lot like you
So, as I'm known to do, I am playing the director's card for my double feature, and I went back to the Alexander Payne movie I Know the Least, which is about Schmidt from 2002, starring Jack Nicholson. I saw this, kind of like you were saying with Savages, I saw it one time in a theater, and I never thought about it since, which is not to say I didn't like it, I just thought it's not a film I'm going to buy because I don't really see myself tossing that on for yucks. And it's just one that I've never really come across on cable or anything like that. For some crazy reason, it's just one of these movies that never really shows up. So for me, well, 10 years later, thereabouts, it's the first time I was going back to this movie. Now, you said, same sort of thing, you said that it was sort of the same idea. You watched it back in 2002.
Yeah, I saw it once at home with my parents' house. I'm pretty sure on VHS, because they didn't get a DVD player until a few years later.
Right.
Yeah, saw it once, hated it.
Okay, so why did you hate it?
Well, I think at the time I was 20. Right. I was like, this movie is so slow. This movie is boring. I can't identify with anyone because I'm not yet at the age of, what's her name?
Hope Davis.
Hope Davis. And, you know, my parents aren't that old, in their 60s yet. So I just think I didn't identify with anyone. And okay. It was just dull.
Yeah. And it was like, the funny thing about it is, so this is, if it's not the only, I don't think it's the only, but it was certainly the first movie where Jack Nicholson was playing a schlub.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that was kind of why he got attention, and we sort of saw that again with Bruce Dern. The one thing I like about Alexander Payne is he really likes to dress down his cast. Like, even think about Matthew Broderick is a good-looking guy. Think about him in Election, though.
Wrinkled, disheveled, clothes
heavy,
a size too big.
Yeah. So
interesting.
That was the thing that I thought about when I first saw it was, wow, look at Jack Nicholson, real Mr. Cool Jack Nicholson, playing this old fart.
Yeah.
Right? So that was what I took away from it the first time. Now, so you're saying it played better for you now coming back 11 years later?
Yeah, much better.
Really?
I think I could appreciate Jack Nicholson's performance.
Okay.
A lot more. Like, it really stood out to me this time just how good and how different of a role this was for him at the time.
Mm-hmm. And still to this
day. And still, even what you're kind of used to seeing him in.
Like the bucket list and that kind of thing?
Oh, God, yeah. I saw that too. Again, he's closer to the age that my parents are now. And I'm sort of, you know, in the Hope Davis position where, you know, I'm planning a wedding. I'm closer to that age than I was, you know, 11 years ago thinking, well, all these people are old and stupid.
for me, I think I like it more rewatching it now.
And you liked it then?
I liked it then. Like, it would have been like, I didn't like it as much as Nebraska. Like, I don't think it like made my top 10 of the year, or you know, it would have been like a 4-star movie if I was doing that kind of thing at the time. But I was like, that's a pretty good movie with a really great performance. Now I think I like the story of it more, just because I like the idea that he's kind of lost in a drift. Mm-hmm. That was the thing I don't think I really latched on to as much. I kind of like saw it as a little bit more of a road movie.
Agreed, yeah.
Then, like, which is now what I see that a little bit more in Nebraska as a road movie. But now I kind of see him as, all of a sudden, he's lost his wife, but by the time he's this age, he's really lost his mom. You know, like, they were in a weird relationship, and he's a child. He doesn't know how to take care of himself.
He's adrift in life. He's lost his job. He doesn't know what to do. His daughter, you know, rebuffs him when he says, "I'm coming to visit."
Yeah.
You know, he's alone.
Yeah. So it's seeing that and seeing kind of how he handles it that I really dug about it. And the one thing, like, as I said, like, watching it and kind of looking at that weird drabness to the whole movie, because it's so muted. It's all these grays and browns and makes that whole part of the country look really ugly.
It could have been done in black and white, and it probably would have made it look more beautiful.
Yeah, which is funny, because I did a post 2 or 3 weeks ago where I took modern films and I flipped them into black and white, like in Photoshop, to see, like, kind of what they would do and what that would bring out. And I this isn't the kind of film that I touched. So I almost want to, like, if I'm ever short on a post, I might go and, like, take screen grabs about Schmidt and see what happens when I flip that into black and white and just kind of what it does. The other thing I'd forgotten about, which I'd forgotten how really, really funny it is about this movie, is Dermot Mulroney.
Yep.
Oh my God. Tell people about him in case they haven't seen this movie, because he's such an awesome part of it.
He is Randall, the fiancé, with his handlebar mustache, his long hair.
that's thinning.
That's thinning and balding.
Yeah.
And he's just, again, he's not dressed well. Even at the wedding scene.
Yeah.
The wedding scene is ridiculous. There's such ugly clothes, and he just looks ridiculous. He's just an over the... And I guess he is an over-the-top character compared to some of the others who seem like a more fully developed character.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jack Nicholson is, you know, a fully rounded character where he's almost just this comedic
cartoon.
Sketch. Yeah, this cartoon.
Yeah. It really gets underlined like when they get back to his childhood home and he's in his bedroom.
Yeah.
And you can see things like participant ribbons.
Yeah, or when you meet, you know, Kathy Bates.
Oh my god. I'd forgotten about how awesome she is in this movie.
She's awesome in everything.
Well, she is.
But yeah.
You know, like it's one of these things that I've sort of saved up American Horror Story just cuz I want to go through it all on one bender, and I know that she's a big part of that. But yeah, like Randall's whole family right down to Howard Hesserman is his dad, from WKRP and, mm-hmm. and Head of the Class. I was like, oh my
god, Head of the
god,
Class, yeah.
Where were you this whole time? Yeah, no, his whole family is nuts, but you love them, like, because they're cartoons, but they're real people. Just, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm from a big city and I know people who watch films and read books. Like, you know, they're honest, they're welcoming, and I think maybe that's kind of what Warren Schmidt sees in them in the end.
Yeah, he had at his wedding speech.
Yeah,
at the end, I think that sort of is where you do see that he sees them as part of the family now, and as, you know, individuals instead of these others.
Yeah.
That are taking his daughter away.
Right, right, and right down to Randall, because I think at one point he even says, "I think she can do way better."
Yeah, he tells her not to go through with the wedding.
Yeah, and his wife June Squibb. Says, hey, listen, you know, when my dad met you, he didn't like you either.
Yeah.
They're kind of freaky about, like, you know, what our parents and, like what likewise what we'll think of, like, the people that we marry. Like, they first meet these people, like, that's always been one of those things that flashes through my brain, is how we judge people. And even if they're, like, they're very nice. Like, that's the thing. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not saying if your parents meet your boyfriend or your girlfriend and they're just, you know, they're dicks. Because, right? because that's a point where, you know, your parents are probably realizing something that you're just seeing past. But, like, just that moment where your parents are either being a nitpick or they're not unimpressed, that kind of thing. It's like, on the one hand, you sort of see where they're coming from, because you probably do that too.
Yeah, you know, or you're so blinded by, you know, the love of this other person that you feel that you don't see that, you know, this person is awful.
Yeah, yeah. But that's the kind of thing, like, hearing June Squibb say that to Jack Nicholson, and then, you know, kind of him seeing, no, he's a good person.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's kind of what you hope that everybody can kind of get there. To this day, I never tire of hearing Jack Nicholson say, "Dear Ndugu."
I had forgotten about that.
Really?
Entirely.
Wow.
Yeah, and so that was, you know, this great rediscovery for me. Oh, yeah, I forgot about his, you know, his child.
Yeah, his African foster child who he sponsors. And writes these very confessional letters to...
Yeah, very adult letters to,
yeah,
you know, a little
six-year-old
boy.
In, like... I don't want to pick the country because I can't remember exactly where it is. But yeah, some, like, world vision child who can't appreciate any of this, but he's just...
But he has this catharsis, this, you know, it's this process of pouring his heart out.
Yeah.
To, you know, I don't even think it matters who, but...
Yeah, to anybody. Yeah.
To anyone looking for that lifeline now that his wife is gone,
yeah,
and his daughter is, you know,
yeah,
abandoned
and
him.
And it's just, yeah, and it, like, we only see him writing the one letter. Every other time it's just voiceover. And every time he just says, "Dear Ndugu," I still laugh. that's the one thing I remember seeing this in a theater. Every time he said that, the place just broke up. it's awesome. For me, coming back to it, along with the fact that, like, I think it's pretty impressive that we both rewatched it and liked it more.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that often happens, actually, with me. I watch it, I'm like, yeah, I got that right the first time. Or sometimes I notice things I didn't notice. But the takeaway for me, and it kind of counters something you said earlier, is actually how a director can endear themselves as their career goes on. Like, you said that you're not really big on Alexander Payne. And I'm actually finding that, like, as his movies go on, I'm liking him more and more. Where, like, I'm looking back at the other films he's made and, like, revisiting them and liking them more. as opposed to a lot of my really, really favorite directors are people whose work were like really, really well established by the time I came around, versus Payne's first movie was about the time I was getting into film. Like,
so you got in on the ground floor essentially of his career.
Yeah, and
you've been following.
Yeah, and I didn't really kind of take it for that much at the time. Maybe because I didn't really put the pieces together as to who he was or see it all together. So I kind of like looking back on somebody's filmography and say, hey, you know, this person's pretty good. This person's making more movies. I'm going to kind of go along with that. Is there anybody like that for you that, like, as they've gone along, you've started
to follow them more? I tend to do that more with actors,
like,
than I do with directors, and kind of, you know, discover them one amazing performance and then say, oh my God, you're so good. What else have you been in that I've missed? And I've kind of always approached a lot of films.
Do you have anybody like that right now?
Still working my way through the Danish films of Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, that's right. That's right, yeah.
Watched King Arthur on the weekend, so slowly.
Oh, that's right. He is in that, too. What was... I was thinking about him the other day in something older. I always think of him as Le Chiffre.
Like, see, and I'm not a Bond person, so that was a discovery for me this year to go and actually watch Casino Royale. But obviously, like, last year, The Hunt was my favorite movie. This year, The Hunt is probably, again, my favorite movie. So it's when I see
someone like that.
So when I see someone like that, that's sort of the way I tend to go, as opposed to following a director.
Right.
Because I would say probably the last director I really did that with was probably Danny Boyle.
Yeah, okay. And you kind of have that thing where you look back and it's like, holy crap.
Yeah.
While you were talking there, I got really, really distracted because I pulled up Mads Mikkelsen's filmography, and the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, about the 6th or 7th one down was Monsters Incorporated. And I was like, wait, what? Apparently, he is the voice of Randall on the Danish dub.
Right? And wouldn't that be perfect?
I would love to, I kind of want to watch that now. I think it looks like he's done a few of those Pixar movies where he is the Danish voice of whoever.
Which is so funny because Randall's my favorite character. Well, because I love Steve Buscemi.
Yeah. But now you want to see that. Now you want to see the Danish Monsters, Inc. just for Mads Mikkelsen.
He's doing a voice in Kung Fu Panda 3.
Of course he is. but I don't get that as much with actors. I'm stupidly a director's guy. So, you know, like I'll just watch like the 4th or 5th movie from a director and then work backwards.
Back.
Like I went through, kind of to tie it in, I went through that with Nicholas Winding Refn. So after around the time of Drive, I watched Bronson and really, really liked Bronson. So I was like, bring on the Pusher films and may as well bring on Valhalla Rising while you're at it. So it's that kind of thing for me.
Yeah, see, I did some of that when after Drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you go to a bunch of the Drive at Lightbox?
I only went to the ones I hadn't seen. I'd already seen Bleeder, which fell into the Mads Mikkelsen category. And I saw Pusher 1 and Pusher 2, but not Pusher 3.
Nice. That is episode 101 of the Matinee Cast. Come on back on Tuesday, December 31st, for episode 102. We'll be doing our top 5 of 2013 and the year in review. I'll have 3 guests on that show, so of course that always makes for fun times. You can plug any old thing. Do you get a byline on your,
yep,
on your website? So where people can read you on something really official, not my little Ricky and Democrat. But where can people read your writings?
You can find me on cineplex.com. Under the news section, please do not judge us on our new website. It's a work in progress. There's some technical difficulties, but usually things work and look good, so maybe check back later.
It's getting better every day.
I know.
Hey, who knows? By the time this goes up, maybe you'll have a whole lot of bugs worked out.
Fingers crossed.
If people want to follow you, where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Rachel_is_here.
Very nice. My site is thematinee.ca. For more audio content, you can find back episodes by going to thematinee.ca/podcasting. You can also find them on Stitcher Radio, Blueberry, and Apple's podcasting app. They're in the iTunes stores as well. And everything gives you handy ways to subscribe for free and get alerts when new episodes drop. Feedback on Nebraska, About Schmidt, The Savages, not to be confused with Savages, by the way. I made that mistake for a minute. Films in 2014 you're looking forward to can be left in the comment section of the site. You can email me, ryan@thematinee.ca. Facebook, or it's facebook.com/darkmatinee, or of course Twitter, matinee_ca. Any final thoughts?
Good night. Can I tell you what I'm looking forward to next year?
Yes.
Godzilla.
Yeah, definitely. I'm right with you on that.
Yeah, after that trailer.
Yeah, after that trailer. And isn't it the dude who did, it's the dude who did Monsters, isn't it?
Yeah, which I didn't like.
Oh, I love Monsters, so I'm all over it. I'm going to wrap this episode up by saying I look forward to bringing you on in another 101 episodes. So episode 202, it's got your name on it right now. For Rachel, I'm Ryan, and we'll see you at the matinee. Find me in the matinee, the dark of the matinee.